We talked to our colleague Nick Kotsenika all about the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Detroit Red Wings. Sean and I hit on trade deadline, playoff races, stadium series, and of course, the Four Nations face-off. All of that and more coming up on this episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast.
NHL at the Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, it's brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, I always start with a witty way of getting you into the show, but we won't be witty this time. We're going to put our heartfelt thoughts out to the city of Los Angeles and everybody there for what's happening there with the fires and the Kings, the Ducks, all the professional sports teams, and the National Hockey League partnering with Red Cross, all looking for donations for what's going on. So felt we needed to do that right off the top, just have our thoughts with everything that's going on in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. You know, I have a good friend out there who's a firefighter. He's not directly involved in it, but he has been in the past. And, you know, what they go through when things like this happen and what they do on the ground, it's awe-inspiring. I mean, we talk about athletes all the time and what they do, and we're going to spend the rest of this hour talking about hockey players and how great they are and how heroic and how brave and all of those things, and then you see people in other walks of life do it, and it really drives it home. And I know both his boys listen to our podcast weekly, so shout out to them and his dad and their dad, and all the heroes in Southern California.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the National Hockey League partnering with the American Red Cross for donations, NHL doing that. So give what you can if you can. Definitely our thoughts are with them. But like you said, Sean, so we will be talking about hockey. That's what we do. We talk about hockey. Nick Kotsenika will join us to talk about, you know what? Hockey. That's what he does too. Nick was in Columbus last night. That's Tuesday night. We're recording this Wednesday. When we talked to him, he was already back in Detroit at the Red Wings practice. So lot to talk about with Nick on two of the hotter teams in the league, two of the best topics going on right now in the league, Blue Jackets and Red Wings. So we hit on all that. But listen, trade deadline chatter starts now, right? I mean, Sean, it always does, right? We have the Four Nations face-off coming up next month. We have the outdoor game between the aforementioned Red Wings and Blue Jackets at Ohio Stadium, the Horseshoe. That's coming up. The trade deadline's not until March 7th, but there's already chatter. You hear it all over the place. I hear about it in my mailbag. It's the questions I get for the next 2 months leading up to it and thoughts after. I got questions about Rasmus Ristolainen from the Philadelphia Flyers. I got questions about the New York Rangers. Would they be a seller even if they're still in the mix for a playoff spot? They've played better. So you ready for 2 months of trade deadline chatter, or, you know, 7 weeks of trade deadline chatter?
Bring it on.
Yeah,
I think it's awesome, and I think in a way it's a way to reflect on where teams are, right, in the standings, and not only where they are, but how you feel about them, right? Because you're projecting whether they should be buyers or sellers, right? And there's a lot of teams that are kind of straddling in that line, and the wild card parts of both the East and the West are so jumbled and so tightly compressed, it's going to be hard to decide what you want to do, right? And it's going to take some serious reflection, because you can fool yourself. You could sit here on January 15th and say you're 3 points out and say, we're 3 points out. We got a chance. Why would we sell? Well, that's not in the best long-term interest of your organization if you don't legitimately have a chance. And look, everybody looks at the Kings from years ago, the Panthers more recently, you know, when they went to the final the year before they won it as an eight seed, and say, hey, all you need is a chip and a chair. Yeah, all you need is a chip and a chair, but you also need the pieces, right? And I think really smart general managers understand. And there's so much that plays into it too, right? It's not just your team. It's where your team is. You look at a team, we're going to talk to Nick about the Detroit Red Wings. They haven't been in the playoffs in a long time. Does that impact how they look at their team? You know, you talked about the New York Rangers. They're a playoff team. That's their destiny. Do they accept not being a playoff team this year when they've already went that route once to try and be better long term? It's a really hard thing to sell here.
Well, look at the Washington Capitals from a year ago, right? In that spot, in the mix, close. Not very good, but close, because that's a jumbled mix. I'm not going to call it the mushy middle. I've done that before on this podcast. You've given me grief about that. But I'm not doing that. I just mentioned it. I just like saying that word, mushy middle. Two words. But the Capitals last year, I think, are a prime example of realism, of understanding what they were at the time. Not a very good hockey team. They sold Kuznetsov to Carolina. Different situation, okay, but they traded him. Mantha went to Vegas. Anthony Mantha went to Vegas. They still made the playoffs because somebody in the East had to. They were the team that did, barely by a tiebreaker, and they got swept, right, by the New York Rangers. They weren't even close in any of those games. They were banged up, but they weren't even close. And then they retooled the whole thing in the offseason, changed out of more than a third of their roster, added a goalie who's I want to talk about later on in this podcast, Logan Thompson, who's just been outstanding. And now they're one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. It can happen like that if you're smart, if you're realistic. And I say all that because the New York Rangers, to me, are in that spot. Like, they are, okay, they're playing better right now. They gave away a point that they didn't want to give away in Colorado last night, Tuesday night. They had a 2-1 lead. The Avalanche score a 6-on-5 goal, and they win it in overtime on Devon Taves. But the Rangers are playing much better. Their structure's back. Their Mika Zibanejad's playing better. Igor Shesterkin's back and playing better. And defensively, they've been better. So that's all good. But I answered this question in my mailbag. Are they a Stanley Cup contender? You look at the Eastern Conference, Sean. Okay, they have the goalie. But are they good enough right now to go and beat New Jersey in a 7-game series? To beat Carolina in a 7-game series, to beat Florida in a 7-game series, Toronto, I don't think so. To me, the Rangers are a team that's exactly the situation where the Washington Capitals were a year ago, a team that needs a retool. And they have pieces that they can trade, Ryan Lindgren, Riley Smith, Jimmy Vesey. If they're not going to be part of their future, regardless of where the New York Rangers are, because I don't think they're going to climb high enough to be in a top three spot in that division, They should trade those guys. Doesn't mean they're punting on the playoffs. Washington didn't, but they should trade those guys and get assets for them because they're not going to be part of their future if that is what the analysis is.
What are the assets
that they get for them? Draft picks, a couple of draft picks, more than they would get for them if they let them walk for nothing.
Yeah, look, to me, the East is really hard because you say, can they beat any of those teams? Yes, every team in the East is flawed, including the Washington Capitals. Like, I know that they're playing 700 hockey, and every week we seem to say, when's it going to stop? When's it going to end? Like, there's nothing about that Washington team that overly scares me if I'm another team in the East, right? I think there's places that they can be exploited. So I think when you look at that, you're kind of like, if I do get in, I have a chance. I don't think it's the same in the West. The West is pretty loaded, right? Like, I think you know there's four teams in the West, and then there's everybody else.
Yeah, the upper echelon there is high.
Yeah. And I don't see that in the East, even though the defending cup champions there. Look, they came into New Jersey last night. It was a great game. It went to a shootout, and Florida won. It was mean. It was nasty. It was defensive. It was a playoff hockey game. And I'm not saying they can't be great again in the playoffs because they have everything you need to be great in the playoffs. But they haven't found that level yet. They have for small instances, and then they regress a little bit, and part of that's just the ups and downs of the season. But I think if you're a East GM, you're kind of thinking, why not me?
First off, it wasn't a playoff game. It was.
I didn't say it was a playoff game.
Yeah, you did. You said it was.
No,
like,
I didn't.
It was like a playoff game. Okay, all right. It was awesome. That was a great game. It was, and sign me up for 7 of those. By the way, I'll take that. Sign me up for 7 of New Jersey, Carolina. Sign me up for 7 games of a Devils because they're a fun, exciting group to watch. Right? I mean, they go at it. They go hard. They got great offense. They got skill. They're not afraid to mix it up. That's a fun team right there to watch play, and They've been really good defensively. Their goaltending has been outstanding. They're a dangerous, really dangerous team. But I understand what you're saying. I think there's caution, though. Like, I think you're, you know, a team like the Rangers, I get it because they're in a window to win now. I understand that. But you have to be a little bit cautious in your approach of not chasing it. Chasing it for the wrong reasons, right? I mean, are you chasing it because we have to? Boston's in this mix too, right? I mean, let's put Boston in this mix. Now, they have to be a playoff team, right? I mean, they're built to be one. That's the way it is. And I think, they're in a playoff spot now. They have sputtered this season. They haven't sputtered like the New York Rangers have sputtered this season, right? They've come back a little bit. You got to, you know, hey, anybody want to manufacture a nice, you know, turmoil in locker room, go ahead and do it, because Pasternak and Marchand have been pretty darn good since that was manufactured and came out. But you have to be realistic too. And are you chasing it just because you have to, or are you chasing it because you really think you can? And if there's question about whether you can, and a retool like Washington did would serve you well, doesn't mean you can't still get in the playoffs. Like, I'll look at the Rangers, okay? And I wrote this. If they were to trade Ryan Lindgren, who I think has value at the trade deadline because he's a playoff experienced veteran defenseman, or Riley Smith or Jimmy Vesey, a combination of the three or all three, they have guys in Hartford that they've used this year. They could bring them up. They could play Gabriel Perreault. Maybe he signs coming out of Boston College. Get him in. Play some meaningful hockey games in the National Hockey League, right? Shesterkin's really good. They have Adam Fox. The Panarin, Trocheck, Lafreniere line is rolling a little bit now. Doesn't mean they can't get in. Nobody in that East, at the bottom of that Eastern race, is, like you said, is just taking it. Doesn't mean they can't get in. But it also means that they're preparing to look ahead to next year, which they've already started to do with the trades that they've already made with Kako and Trouba. So there might be already a little bit of a realistic approach going on there. But I'm making a long point here, but I think the thing about it is you just have to have a realistic idea of what your team is. Washington had that last year, and look where they are now. You can get it back. You can get it back quick with smart, aggressive moves in the offseason too.
I don't want to get stuck here, but are you seriously saying that they traded those two guys to look ahead to next year?
Well, listen, I think the cap situation helped with the Trouba trade. That's not why they traded Jacob Trouba. It was, well, they got, looking ahead to next year, they got $8 million off their cap. Kako is an interesting one. It's a little bit of a different story. He obviously came out right before the trade and kind of threw the whole team under the bus, and I think that had something to do with it, no question about it. But they did say at the time they weren't 100% sold that they want to buy into him long term, so they traded him. Believe what you will, I think those two guys were traded for various reasons, one of which was to look ahead, but it's certainly not the main reason.
You're in a position to possibly be Eastern Conference champion, Stanley Cup finalist, and you trade one of your best defensemen because you're looking forward to next year. Like, that's just silly. But let's go to the West, where I think there's a lot of teams that don't even have to worry about whether they're in or out. And that includes the Colorado Avalanche, who didn't steal a point from the New York Rangers. They took it because they're the better team.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes the Edmonton Oilers, who were the Western Conference champion last year. It includes Winnipeg, who's got a better record than both of them. It includes the Dallas Stars, who are absolutely rolling right now. It may include the Minnesota Wild. But two of those teams in Colorado and Edmonton play each other tomorrow night on ESPN. Four of the game's top six scorers are in that game. Draisaitl, McDavid, Rantanen, and McKinnon. That's ridiculous. If you have a friend who says, I don't like hockey, take them by the hand, buy them a beer, sit them on your couch, and make them watch a period of that game. And if they can still say after that's over, this isn't for me, good for them. I don't think it's happening. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to absolutely electric. I will tell you. So I was sitting down last night with my son, 15-year-old son Josh, watching the Rangers Colorado game with him. I was bouncing around from a few games and that one came on. He wanted to watch that game. He saw Nathan MacKinnon and he goes, "Whoa." Like that was his reaction, like, "Whoa. Look at that." Right? He doesn't watch a ton of hockey. He knows it. He follows it. He sees highlights and all that. But when you watch Nathan MacKinnon shift after shift after shift, there's nothing like it, in my opinion, in the National Hockey League. He is a powerful, it's just, we talk about it all the time, but he is so powerful, so fast, and so exciting to watch. I can't wait to watch that game. Colorado is playing much better hockey. The goaltending has been fantastic. By the way, just want to point this out. Since the Team Canada, we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but since Team Canada was named, since the Four Nations rosters were named, Mackenzie Blackwood is 9-3-1 with a 9.35 save percentage. I mean, it's eye-popping.
What's your point? Was he ever considered?
No.
Do you think he was ever considered to be one of the goalies? So now you're going to take a 10-game sample and be like, well, oh, Team Canada made a huge mistake.
Nope, I'm not saying that at all. Would he be one now? Would he be considered now?
No.
Okay. I probably agree with you on that because the pedigree and the history isn't there. The experience isn't there. But he's been fantastic. Their goaltending situation has gotten so much better. They've gotten so much better. Stuart Skinner's been really good, in the last month plus. And Edmonton's gotten much better. Leon Draisaitl has been outstanding. That's just fun, exciting hockey. And I know Winnipeg's going to have a say. Dallas is going to have a say. Certainly Vegas is going to have a say. Maybe LA has a say as well out there. But how awesome would that be if you had MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Makar, and Draisaitl and McDavid playing in a conference final out west?
The West is just mean. It's a mean thing because you could be really good this year and not get out of the second round. Heck, you might not get out of the first round, or you could be better than six of the eight teams in the East.
The West is, you're right. I mean, it's mean. It is. The East is a little bit different, but there's two teams in the East right now that have come on of late, and they're good stories, really good stories for different reasons. We hit on a lot of that with Nick Kotsunika, our columnist at NHL.com. So here is our interview with Nick, and it's brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Nick, you've had a morning. We appreciate you coming on with us. Your morning started in Columbus at about 5 a.m., and now you are at the Detroit Red Wings practice in Detroit. So, hey, if you're going to talk about two teams right now, those are the two teams to talk about, all in your neck of the woods, Blue Jackets and Red Wings. Pretty good hockey going on there.
Yeah, one hot story to another. I mean, I think the Blue Jackets are not only the best story or most inspiring story in the NHL, but all of sports. And the Red Wings aren't bad either. I know that their winning streak came to an end last night against San Jose, but, you know, they're 7-2-0 under new coach Todd McLellan, and there's a lot to talk about there too. So, pretty fun time right now.
Columbus, I mean, nobody expected much of them this year with what's gone on there with the tragedy with Gaudreau and everything else that's happened. And yet here they are after a really rough start in a playoff position with maybe two of the best individual stories in all of hockey in Werenski and Marchenko, who you wrote about today.
Well, back up even farther. I think before the tragedy, if you'd asked anybody if the Columbus Blue Jackets were going to make the playoffs, I think they'd say no. Don Waddell, who took over as GM, said his goal was to play meaningful hockey in March so the young players could get experience. I mean, this is a team that missed the playoffs the past four seasons, finished last in the East last season, struggled to score last season. Look, first and foremost is the tragedy, the death of Johnny Gaudreau, as a person. Johnny, though, also was their leading scorer the last 2 years. And they traded Patrick Laine 10 days before, not knowing they were going to lose him. Sean Monahan signed, expecting to play with his best friend and former Calgary teammate. So it's crushing, obviously, off the ice, but on the ice, too. They lose their captain, Boone Jenner. They lose one of their best defensemen, Eric DeBranson, a leader in the dressing room. Then they have injuries to other key players. An incredible amount of things for them to overcome. And, even in November, they were pretty far down in the standings. But, you know, they've gone on a heck of a run. They're at a 5-game winning streak now. We can get into all the good reasons why. But to me, it's an incredible story on many levels. And people, you know, how do you not root for the Columbus Blue Jackets, you know, in addition to whatever team you root for?
You know, and maybe the face of this resurgent Blue Jackets team is Zach Werenski, right? And it was interesting. We, you know, our colleague Tom Galitti, you know, we're in a little bit of, a group chat. And he said, if the Blue Jackets keep going, he said this last night, if the Blue Jackets keep going this way, Zach Werenski should be in the Hart Trophy conversation. And maybe he should be in the Hart Trophy conversation right now. 50 points, tied for the league lead among defensemen in scoring with Cale Makar. I know, Nick, you saw him. 2 goals, 2 game-tying goals late in the third period, tied it up against Philadelphia. You talked to him. We've seen Zach Werenski before. We know he's a good player, right? We know he is. Health has always been the thing that's brought him down. What did you see now with a healthy Zach Werenski, and what are you hearing from a healthy Zach Werenski?
Well, at this point, I think you're absolutely right. Let's start on the ice. He's a beast in training. He was the first one on the ice in an optional morning skate yesterday. And then he logs over 31 minutes. He has the puck for 2 minutes of that time. He skated 4.6 miles, scores 2 goals, almost had a hat trick in overtime. Just incredible, right? If you look at the numbers, he leads all NHL skaters in ice time. So he's playing more than anybody else in the league. He leads NHL defensemen in goals. He's tied with Cale Makar for in points. He leads his team in scoring. Then there's another angle to this. So we just went over everything that's happened in Columbus, you know, losing Johnny Gaudreau, losing Boone Jenner, their captain, and Eric Branson, another big leader. Zach has really filled a leadership void in the room. Set an example for his teammates. I think on many, many levels, he should be not only considered for the Norris, but the Hart. Then you go, to more accolades. I think Don Waddell and I think Dean Evason at this point today need to be considered for GM of the Year and Coach of the Year. Now, a lot of those awards are going to come down to whether they make the playoffs or not. That's the reality. But at this point in the season, I don't see how you can't consider them all for those accolades.
I would honestly argue that Dean deserves attention for Coach of the Year, whether they make the playoffs or not. What he's done to shepherd this team through something that's so rarely ever been experienced in the NHL, it's almost mind-boggling because nothing was expected.
Agreed. The first thing Dean will say is that, Don Waddell's leadership has been important, and it has, right? And now, this team has a lot of draft picks from, Jarmo Kekalainen's reign that are playing very well right now and should, tip your hat to Jarmo. But, Don takes over this team, has no idea what's to come, but he signs Monahan. Then after the tragedy, really set a good tone for this team, has made some really shrewd pickups on waivers and signings to add depth with all these injuries. And one thing he will tell you is under these circumstances, he really looked for good people because he needed good people in the room. But now you look at Dean Evason, right? So he comes in preaching team first. He's a defense first guy, right? But this is a team that struggled to score last year, lost Johnny Gaudreau, traded Patrick Laine, and is now one of the top scoring teams in the NHL. So he's found a way to get players to buy in and has unlocked offense and given them, a way they can play that's predictable and kind of rolls 4 lines. He's really done a great job with this group.
I mean, look, Kent Johnson's coming along. He was a high draft pick. Fantilli's coming along. Mm-hmm. He was a high draft pick. Cole Sillinger's coming along. But Marchenko, and you wrote about him, Kirill Marchenko, he's the better than point per game player in this league that no one's talking about, except for you, Nick, because you wrote about it.
Well, he is, he's a guy that we don't talk about much. He is Russian, so the language barrier is part of that. He's in Columbus, which is part of that. But, you know, he came into this league and scored 20-something goals as a rookie in, like, 59 games. He was third among rookies in goals that year. So you knew he could score, but he was minus 20-something. And then last year he could score again. He was still a minus player. They signed him to a contract this summer, and they challenged him right away. They're like, you've been on the outside. You need to get on the inside. You need to be harder on the puck. You need to be competitive all over the ice and in your own end. And if you do that, it will generate offense. Well, he's bought in. Like, he's got a big body. He wins battles. He leads Columbus forwards and takeaways with 20. And so now here's this guy who was minus 28 over his first two NHL seasons. He's plus 26. The only player in the league who's ahead of him is Leon Draisaitl at plus 27. I know you could say, oh, it's plus minus, and that there's truth to that. There's a lot that's outside of a player's control. He's played with Sean Monahan and Voronkov, played a lot with Zach Werenski, the team scoring a lot. All that's part of it for sure. But I think it paints a picture of a guy who's really become more of a two-way player under Dean Evason, and it's showing up now. And, you know, look, he made a great pass on the tying goal to Werenski last night, and then he iced the shootout with a Kucherov one-handed goal, you know, deke. He's a star, and I think people need to pay more attention to him and know what the Blue Jackets are doing.
Last one on Columbus. I know when you talked to Werenski, you know, he said one of the goals was to be competitive, right? Into March, to have something to play for, especially with the stadium series game hanging over them. Barring unforeseen circumstances, they've done that. I guess the question is, right after that stadium series game is the trade deadline. They were presumed sellers from the first day of the season. Are they buyers now, and does a goalie make the difference for them?
I don't know if they're going to be aggressive buyers. And, you know, you mentioned goaltending. Their goaltending has not been good, which makes this all the more remarkable. I haven't even gotten into that and the stuff that I've written. What I think is most likely, they have a lot of UFAs. And I think the plan was obviously to move some of those UFAs for assets. But I think what's likely, if they're in this race, is that they hold on to those UFAs as their own rentals. But I got to say, you know, considering the whole circumstance, considering the history of this franchise, you'd like to reward your guys and your fans by buying, right? So I could see it, right? Like, make a run for the playoffs. Jarmo Kekalainen did it very aggressively.
Yes.
You know, and they did win a playoff series that year, right? And that's important in Columbus, which to me is a sleeping giant of a market. I think Don Waddell doesn't do something that aggressive, but yeah, like it would be nice to see him be a buyer, reward that locker room, reward these fans, do something positive this year. But I do think at minimum, they might hold on to those UFAs.
Well, I mean, listen, Don Waddell has been a buyer the past several years with the Carolina Hurricanes. He understands. He's also, I find him to be one of the more realistic managers in the league, in that he knows exactly what he has. He understands what he has. He understands the chances his teams have. Last year with Carolina, they had a big chance. So we went out and bought big, right? This team, I can see that with their own rentals. But Nick, I think one of the most important things, and this is a way to flip it to the Red Wings, is that we looked at that stadium series game on March 1st. And the spectacle of it is what everybody was looking at. It wasn't necessarily the teams, right? It wasn't necessarily the impact the game could have. Ohio Stadium, how many fans are you going to pack in there? What an incredible venue. All of those things, remarkable. But now this game, because Columbus is playing the way they are, and Detroit's playing the way it is, now this game has some meaning to it. Some real. It looks like it should have some real meaning to it. And you know, that to me is one of the spicier things that's going to come, you know, we'll be looking at. We're looking at the Four Nations tournament, but coming out of the Four Nations, whereas everybody's turned their focus to the trade deadline, that focus on that game, those 2 points are going to be huge.
I'm a Michigan graduate, right? And the Big House game really? Will always no. hold a special
no way.
Place in my
you
heart.
Are?
Yeah, shocker that I brought that up, eh? But I got to tell you, I've been to Ohio Stadium. My wonderful boss, Sean Rourke, sent me down there for the Michigan Ohio State football game this year, which I believe the Michigan Wolverines won, right?
Yes, they did.
And I'm telling you, I think I've covered 27 NHL outdoor games. Ohio Stadium has the potential to be one of the best venues the NHL has ever had, just because of the way the stadium is built. There is very little sideline space. The stands go straight up. I don't know how many it's going to seat for hockey, but it seats 100,000 for football. Like, it could be incredible. Like, if you're in like the upper deck that day, like, you're going to have a wonderful view almost anywhere you sit. I think it's got a potential to be an electric atmosphere. And now, yes, both teams as of today are in the mix for the playoffs. It could be a very meaningful game. You've got a lot of Michigan Wolverines on both teams, which is an interesting subplot. And then you've got guys who know each other, like Dylan Larkin and Zach Werenski played together in youth hockey, played together in college, or at the U.S. National Team Development Program, at least at the same time. There's so many great subplots. But yes, it's great to see Detroit playing well under Todd McClellan. And I'm sure we'll get into the reasons why shortly.
That was my next question. But before I get to that, how's it going to feel to root for Notre Dame?
Who says I'm rooting for Notre Dame?
You can't be rooting for Ohio State.
Can't be rooting for Ohio State.
I'll probably be watching hockey that night, Sean. Let's put it that way. That's a can't win for a Michigan grad.
So what has Todd McClellan done to make the Detroit Red Wings relevant again?
Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, I'll rewind again. So last season, the Red Wings struggled defensively. They also lost some offense in the offseason. So I think coming in this year, Derek Lalonde was really concerned about keeping the puck out of the net. It certainly wasn't the plan, but I think what ended up happening is they became too structured, too passive, too worried about what they were supposed to do, and just sort of ended up on their heels. They lost confidence, and the snowball went the wrong way. So Todd McClellan comes in, immediately, you know, identifies that. And, you know, the famous thing here is after the first game, a 5-2 loss to Toronto, at his first practice, right where I'm sitting right here, he yells so loudly everybody can hear, "Play bleeping hockey. It's the game you've been playing your whole lives, right? Just play," right? And I think that was a weight off these guys' shoulders, right? And they just go out and they're on their toes. They're more aggressive. He's emphasized the forecheck. So they've just gone from on their heels to on their toes. They started to get some success and had got some confidence back, right? Well, that's the honeymoon period. And I think what I'm going to write about today for NHL.com is now comes the hard part. The sobering thing, if you're Detroit, is when you look at the remaining schedule, by multiple measures, they have the hardest remaining schedule in the league. If you average the points percentage of their remaining opponents, it's the hardest in the league. I think they have the most road games left and most games against current playoff teams left. So they got a long way to go. And the thing for both Columbus and Detroit is there's like eight teams in a five or 6 point clump. It's going to be extremely competitive down the stretch, but they're in it. And, you know, I think that that's huge, huge for the Red Wings. They're in it. They got to stay in it.
Well, so you hit on a lot of the things there with the Wings. And so the question I had, and it remains, is it sustainable or is this just the new coach bump? And I asked that because they have a lot of veteran guys, right, who have been brought together to try to pull this team into the playoffs for the first time in a long time. So there's the motivation, there's experience, but is it just a team that got a little breath of fresh air? And maybe the start of it going the other way was the San Jose game? Or is this a sustainable group, sustainable defensively, sustainable goaltending, enough to stay in it?
The truth is, I don't know. And that's what I'm eager to see. My knee jerk is that it's probably not sustainable.
Right.
I think coming into the year, I did not expect this to be a playoff team. I didn't expect it to be as bad as it was the first half. But I didn't expect it to be a playoff team. I look at that stretch as probably the new coach bump. And if you know Todd McClellan, he's, you know, we just went over, he, you know, play effing hockey. And that's not him normally. Like, he's right. A pretty structured coach. He's going to hold them accountable. So what you do is you give them some some leash, you know, let them run for a bit, let them feel good about themselves, and now you got to rein them in. And it really started the third period the other night against Seattle. It bled into that game against San Jose. Now they're going on the road against the Stanley Cup champions, and it's going to get hard from here. So I think he's got to rein them in and got to make it sustainable. What's good, though, is some little things, like the power play or the penalty kill is improved. Hopefully that's sustainable for them. Forechecking and being on your toes, like that's something they can sustain. So there are some good things that I think they can continue, but I think it's going to be an uphill battle to make the playoffs still.
Is it a necessity considering what Steve Yzerman's done this year?
Depends how you look at that. I mean, I don't think Steve's in danger. You know, I don't sense that, you know, if you're thinking that way. I think Todd McLellan, the plan for him is to be here long-term. You know, this wasn't an interim situation. I think Steve Yzerman and Todd McLellan are going to be here. I do think that you're starting to see some impatience in the market. This has been 8 seasons out of the playoffs, the longest stretch in a long history of Red Wings hockey. So, you know, I think it's most likely they take a step back this season. Then you're hoping that some of these young players that they have continue to progress, some of these prospects show up and make an impact. But that's a larger, longer conversation.
Last one for me, because I know you got to go because the Red Wings are practicing and you're there. But, you know, one of the things, and I think you mentioned it, that you saw in Detroit was Sam Hallam, right? The coach of Sweden for the Four Nations Faceoff coming up in less than a month. We will be in Montreal, the three of us, and then Boston for the Four Nations Faceoff. And one of the things you're looking forward to, I think, you know, we all wrote about some things we're looking forward to is, you know, Sweden, you know, Finland, right? This is not, I think you wrote, this is not the Two Nations Faceoff, it's the Four Nations Faceoff. What'd you think when you saw Sam Hallam there scouting? What did you think about that? I mean, this team's made already, you know, but it's a different approach. These aren't NHL coaches. They're not looking at this every day from an NHL perspective.
I'm really intrigued by it. I really wanted to talk to him. I just didn't have the opportunity that night. But when you look at Sweden and Finland for this tournament, they're doing things differently than Canada and the United States, right? Canada and the United States, it's NHL coaches. Sweden and Finland, it's not. And there are certainly drawbacks to that, but maybe there are advantages, right? Sam can sit up there and scout and put all of his energy into strategizing for Sweden for this tournament, right? Whereas, you know, the Canadian and U.S. coaching staffs are concerned about their NHL teams. Same for Finland, I assume, right? So I'm very interested to see how those teams use that to their advantage and maybe how it hurts them. You know, one thing about like Finland is famous for this because it's a smaller country. These players are used to playing together, right? And they have a style, they have an identity, and it clicks right away when they come together. And in a short tournament like this, that's going to matter, right? Like there's no time to feel this thing out, right? And figure your team out. Like you got to hit the ground running. And maybe Finland, for example, their advantage is they know who they are. They know how they play. They know what their roles are. And boom, you know, you better be ready for them.
Nick, we're going to let you go because we know you got to get to practice and then you got to get back home. Safe travels. And we'll see you in a few weeks.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
As always, terrific stuff from Nick. He's a traveler. Columbus, Detroit. The interview was brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part. Get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. I love Nick's dedication. You know, it's terrific. And he's gotten some great stuff out of Columbus. And finally, good for him, he's finally got something to write about in Detroit.
He's like Johnny Cash. He's been everywhere, man.
Wow. I like that reference.
I'm going to start calling him the man in black.
There you go. Yeah. I don't think
we see him in Montreal.
Yeah. That's good. I like it.
Le homme en noir.
Oh, see, you were counting down, testing your mic in French before we started recording. Now you're speaking French. So when we go to Montreal for the Four Nations Face-Off next month, I fully expect you to be doing all the ordering when we go out in French.
Very quick, very funny story. The first time I ever went to Canada was when I was in college. We went to Montreal. We were lost. We may have had one too many Labatt's. We needed to get back to the hotel. I had taken French. My friends asked, told me I had to go get directions. I did. Didn't understand a word.
Yeah.
Gave directions like I knew what I was talking about. We ended up back at our hotel. Hero for the weekend.
There you go.
Look Just you. Guessed. No GPS. No, not because I'm old. There was no GPS when I was in college. Yeah. Made the whole thing up. I'm like, 3 blocks, make a left. 4 blocks, make a right. It'll be right there. Bam. Must have been unconscious. I must have unconsciously understood what the man was telling me. Because consciously, fantastic. I did not.
That's excellent. I think of like Will Ferrell answering the question in the movie Old School, right? You know, just so when blacks out answers, and there you go.
When we go back for Four Nations, I will handle all the directions and all the ordering.
I'm good with that. Poutine, well, I do the appetizers.
And
don't
smoked
forget.
Meat for every meal.
All right, that'll work. We're going to all come back about 50 pounds heavier. That'll be great. Four Nations are coming up, though. I mean, the Four Nations tournament, the Four Nations face-off, Sean. We've talked about it. It's been in the distance, right? I mean, but now it's less than a month away. Like we're at January 15th now. It's less than a month away. It's really coming into focus. We did a thing on NHL.com, storylines that we're looking ahead to in the Four Nations. And I believe yours was, if I am correct, yours was the old guard on the Swedish defense. Hedman, Ekholm. Carlson, we're calling them old. They're 34 each, I think. 34, 35 years old.
Each one of them's 34. The man writing about them being old is 50 plus.
All right. So, but it's a great question. But it's a great question you ask. Like,
there's a lot of miles on those three guys.
Yeah.
They're not 34-year-old mileage. It's like my car, right? It's got like 200 and change thousand miles on it. It's not that old a car. But it's got a lot of miles on it. These guys have a lot of miles on them. Hedman's played in 3 finals in the last 5 years. You know, like 1,000 games for Carlson. And Ekholm plays a really hard physical game. And he went to the final last year. So there's some duress on those three young men.
I think it's going to be a very interesting thing to watch in the Four Nations, not how they handle it. We would expect them to be able to handle it well, but does the pace, does the speed, does all of that over the course of the tournament, and it's a quick tournament, does it add up? The minutes pile up on those guys, right? So is that to the detriment of the Swedes or because of their pedigree and everything we know about them and how good they've been? Is it to the benefit of the Swedes? To the Swedes that they have those three guys and they can handle those minutes on the back end.
You know, and I wish I could change my answer. My answer now would be the Finland-Sweden game. That round robin game in Montreal is going to be a rock fight.
It's a great
rivalry. In the best possible way. Like you don't really talk about rock fights as good things, but it's going to be awesome. There is no loss of hatred there. They do not like each other. In a way, like the U.S. and Canada don't like each other, but it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
This is deeper. There's hundreds more years of cohabitation there and of hockey rivalry and of big brother, little brother. Like if you look at it, it's Sweden's Canada and Finland's the US, right? Like, but Finland's not buying that. And if they only win one game in this tournament, it better be Sweden.
Well, yeah, that game's on February 15th at Bell Center in Montreal, 1 o'clock game on ABC. It's a good one. It precedes U.S. Canada. That's the night. That's the nightcap. That's the 8 o'clock game on ABC in the U.S. On ABC in the U.S. and Sportsnet TVR as well in Canada. So 1 o'clock on February 15th for Sweden, Finland, and Sean. You're right. Like there's a great rivalry there now because we're based in North America. We are North Americans. We tend to gravitate towards the Canada U.S. Right. makes sense, but that's rivalry Saturday, you know, at the Four Nations face-off, February 15th, Finland-Sweden at 1, Canada-US at 8. And, I mean, if you're a hockey fan who knows a lick about international hockey and international rivalries, you're glued that day, right? Take a little break after the Finland-Sweden game, come back for the US-Canada game. But you're right, and also I think important with that is those two teams, Finland and Sweden, those two countries, I think in a way they're viewed as underdogs in this tournament. Well, they are. They're viewed as underdogs in this tournament. There shouldn't be an underdog in this tournament because all four nations are just fantastic and filled with NHL players and NHL stars. But they are viewed as underdogs, and the winner of that game might elevate itself. Now, one of those two teams, if not both of them, could come into that game having beaten either, you know, Sweden's going to play Canada in the first game on the 12th of February. Finland's going to play the U.S. on the, you know, the second game of the tournament on the 13th of February. So we'll see who comes into that game. Possible they both come in with losses, one with a win, one with a loss, or both with wins. But they're looking to make a statement, I think, that this isn't, as Nick wrote in his thing, the two nations face off. This is the four nations face off. And I'm curious. I want to see it.
Have you been living under a rock?
No, don't throw rocks at me.
Well, this isn't about the rock fight, but there's one favorite in this tournament. Everybody else is getting a participation trophy.
The U.S., right? Of course.
No. Don't buy into the fake news, Dan. There's one hockey playing country in this tournament. It's the Canadians. They own the game. They could bring their third string C team and beat every team in this tournament by 7 goals. They are bringing their third string goalies, and they're just doing it out of charity.
This is dripping with sarcasm. Like, it's pouring out of my computer as I look, you know, as we do this podcast, the sarcasm.
Dan, it's their game.
It is not their game. And I'm going to tell you, I'm glad you brought it up. All right, we touched on this earlier. Mackenzie Blackwood has been fantastic since the rosters were named. Logan Thompson, forget about Mackenzie Blackwood, okay? Logan Thompson's been terrific all season long. All season long. He didn't get a sniff, didn't get a call, didn't get one word from Hockey Canada's management about this tournament. They went with Aiden Hill, Jordan Binnington, and Samuel Montembeau. Hill's a Stanley Cup champion. Binnington's a Stanley Cup champion. Okay, fine. You want to go with that? Logan Thompson's outplaying all of them this season. And honestly, it's not close. Among Canadian goalies, he's first in wins, first in save percentage at .921, second in goals against average. Who's first? Darcy Kuemper with the Los Angeles Kings. All right? He's been better. Been better. I'm not saying they need a do-over. We'll see how this goes, okay? But are they going to rue the day they didn't bring the guy who's been the best Canadian goalie this season?
Dude, they could have brought me.
I don't know about that,
Sean. Did you not listen to anything I just said?
Yeah, I listened. But seriously, though, I mean, do you think they rue it? Like, do you think we're going to be looking back at this? We have no idea how Logan Thompson would do in the tournament like this. No clue. So it's not a given, okay? We have seen Aiden Hill play very big in big games. We have seen Jordan Binnington do it. But this is a now tournament. It's a right now tournament. And it's an NHL tournament. And this guy's been the best Canadian goalie in the National Hockey League this season.
Yeah, I don't know. But if it comes down to goaltending, I think that will be a failure for Canada because their roster is so loaded. Like, let's ask any of our friends to the north about their B team and how it would run roughshod over the Americans, the Swedes.
You only get to bring one team.
In theory, you could combine the best players from those three teams, turn it into a two nations tournament. The best Swedes, the best Finns, and the best Americans. Six from each. He's still not going to beat the Canadians.
I can't even tell if you're serious anymore. I can't even tell if you're joking or serious.
I'm not serious anymore. My friends. I love our friends to the north. Yeah. My wife is of Newfoundland heritage. I can't wait to go to Canada. But this is a four-nation tournament. It's not a one-nation tournament. It's not a two-nation tournament. It's a four-nation tournament. And there would be no shock in Finland or Sweden winning this tournament. So, no, they're not underdogs. All sarcasm and all fun aside, Canada's a great team, but there's three other great teams in this tournament.
Sweden was the team that I picked as the bold prediction. When we started the year, so, you know, two plus weeks ago now, we did bold predictions for 2025, and my bold prediction was Sweden wins the Four Nations faceoff. And, you know, listen, I truly believe that they have everything to be able to win it. And Ullmark's injury is scary, but Markstrom's been outstanding, right? I mean, and Gustafsson has been outstanding.
The Canadians would love to have one of those three.
I know.
They should trade.
Deadline moves?
We'll give you Connor McDavid for Markstrom and Hedman.
Oh my God. All right. Now you're getting a little out crazy. I want to ask you this because you've brought this up previous to this as we've talked about Four Nations faceoff. Auston Matthews, right? You were pretty like, okay, I don't think he's going to be there. He probably shouldn't be there. He owes it to the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's his team. If he's banged up at all. Matthews has come back. He's playing really well. And Brad Treliving, GM in Toronto, said he doesn't see any hesitation right now, anything holding him up. So you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's Brad's job. I was going on what was presenting itself. Here was a player who was hurt. Here was a player who was going to Germany to try and get better. Not an everyday occurrence for a normal injury. And I think it's the same thing with Ullmark. I think it's the same thing with Faber, with all of those guys. Like, this tournament's really important. It's really important to everybody. It's really important to the players. Some of them haven't got to do this in a long time. Some of them have never got to play best on best. But if you're hurt, you need to be healthy for the playoffs. And four games in 7 days against the very best in the world in two different locations. Not a recipe for health.
No, it is one of those interesting things, obviously. And with due respect to the tournament, it's not the Olympics, right? I mean, and that's, you know, this is a huge thing. It is. The Olympics is a little bit different. And more nations, obviously. An even bigger stage because it's the Olympics. I mean, it's just different. I wonder if the feeling would be different, but I agree with you. Although now I look at Auston Matthews and I say, I agree with Brad Treliving. Like, look at him play. Like, there's nothing holding him back at this point. Chris Kreider is an interesting one too, right? I mean, he's on Team USA. He's got back injury. He's had back spasms earlier in the year. He just missed some time with what they're calling an upper body injury. I don't know if it was his back. I'm going to take a guess that it was, but he came back. But if he's compromised and the Rangers have plans to try to make a playoff push, I mean, he's another one, right? I mean, it's a real – we're coming to that time now. And listen, I talked to Jiri Lehtinen, who's the GM of Team Finland, the other day, and I said, what are you watching now? You already named your team. What are you looking for now other than just monitoring how the guys are doing, this and that and the other? He goes, we're watching all the other guys that were close because we might have to get – we might have to put one of them in. We might have to make a call to get one of those guys in because you just don't know, right? And those guys are also constant communication. Like at the time, Erik Haula from the Devils was out of the lineup, right? When I talked to him, and he said, no, I've already talked to Eric. You know, we're in touch. We're not that worried. So they're in touch. They're looking. But they're watching the other guys now, you know? If you're Team USA, you got to be watching like Cole Caulfield, who's scoring almost every game now, right? You know, you got to be looking at it and saying, if we got to make a change, here's A, here's B, here's C.
Yep. You know what Yuri Lehtonen's watching, though? He's watching Patrick Laine score power play goal after power play goal and just laughing. Laughing at all of the people who said, don't put Patrick Laine on this team. He doesn't belong there.
You're laughing, too.
Well, I'm not going to take any credit for that.
You should. You should take credit for that. Hey, look, the Columbus Blue Jackets have been a really good story this year. Dean Evason did coach's room with us last year. I'm going to take credit.
And you already got Trent Yoni a job this year.
And I got Trent Yoni a job this year. Yeah, it's fun. Listen, Four Nations coming up less than a month now. Obviously, we talked Blue Jackets and Red Wings with Nick. That Stadium Series game coming up March 1st. Trade deadline March 7th. It's a busy time, and plus the playoff races are heating up, Sean. It is a busy time in the NHL, and you are 100% right. I have a date with the television and the Edmonton Oilers and Colorado Avalanche Thursday night.
No sleep till Stanley Cup, Dan. It's not the Beastie Boys, no sleep till Brooklyn. It's no sleep to Stanley Cup now. We're at January 15th. The next time we get to relax, June. Is July
5th. Yeah, I will make it July 4th. How about that? July 4th it is. All right, this was fun. Sean, and again, the podcast brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.